Connection is a healthy and essential aspect of our daily lives. From a warm hug after a hard day to kind words just when we need them, these gentle moments give us an understanding of life's true meaning. But when the ability to connect is interrupted by the hustle of daily life and to-do lists pile up next to the worry of who needs school supplies, sometimes making decisions about our health and the well-being of our loved ones can take a back seat. When it comes to those we care for, vaccines are one of the greatest public health success stories, and along with other measures, are one way to help prevent certain diseases. At Merck, we envision communities where families, healthcare providers, local organizations, and advocates work together. Health equity happens when every person, regardless of age and ethnicity, in every community, has fair access to healthcare, including the vaccines they need. For more information, please visit whyvaccines.com.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome, where Troy has tied the champion, who happens to be Troy. I'm going to explain that another time. But first, I got to go back to my notes section because I'm getting a call from Douglas Crosby that interrupted things. But I do want to tell you, in terms of MMA fights, we still got a lot to come up to on today's show, guys. Dana White says that he has some huge news on Max Holloway that's coming out soon. What is Dana talking about? I'm going to give you guys my thoughts. Plus, Gable Stevenson has been cut from the NFL. Shocker! Plus, Joe Rogan isn't against the Tyson versus Paul fight. I'm going to bring you those stories and more on today's show. Let's get started. Dana was doing something candid. I think this is called an Instagram Live. But it was something just very candid where he's in the war room and he's working. He's talking to the public. You guys can ask him questions. He's firing back and he says something. I get all of this. I got to set this up because the whole clip is only 14 seconds. So this is my sense. And Dana says, you know, we got some news coming out. We got some news coming out on Connor. We got some news coming out on Chandler. Got some news coming out on Oliveira. We got some news coming out on Holloway. And that's all he says, right? Now, this is called a tease. This is awesome. I mean, it just works. Hey, I got some news. Come back tomorrow. Dana lured me in a couple months ago. Where were we? That was the night Patty Pimlet fought King Green. Okay, when was that? About 2 months ago? So the day before, Dana announces, hey, tune in tomorrow at 1. I'm going to be on Instagram Live. And he had some big news. And I have never, those have never got me. The news will come out. I'll hear about it. Off we go. I don't have to see it live. I had to see that live. I didn't know how to do it. I have Instagram, but I know how to do it. So I get Brett Okamoko and Laura Sanko. They're on board too. Like, there is something about, I have news, but I'm not going to give it to you till tomorrow. Like, there was something about all three of us are huddled around a phone. He ends up canceling it, by the way. If you're wondering what the news was, he leaves us hanging at 1 o'clock, and it was like 12 minutes past, and he sends out a message. It's canceled. Not tune in, and it'll be an hour late. I don't know what that news was. I don't know if it ever came, but it worked. The hook worked. Now, I feel like it kind of answered itself on Connor. When he said, I have news coming out on Connor and news coming out on Chandler. It's like, okay, I think, right? I think those are together. Got a pretty good idea, which means a date. There's nothing else to discuss there. And that is interesting. Okay. He slips in Oliveira. Now, I was late to the party on Charles Oliveira. You guys have told me for years, okay? I was late. And I finally even made a deal with Gabriel Checo that I would not say anything bad about Charles. But it left me with nothing to talk about. I didn't get it. I watched Charles fight Sakarin. He lost the fight. I watched it and I was close. I was right there. It was a different vantage point. I've never got to see Charles that close. And even in losing the fight, which was the right call, he lost the fight. Now I get it. Now I get it. I saw it. I saw what you guys have been seeing. I saw what you've been telling me to see. And I can't wait for the news. I can't wait for Charles's next fight. I would be very excited to know who that's going to be. And there was a rumor going around that Charles was going to fight at Noche. I'm not suggesting for you he does. It's in 2 weeks. But there was a rumor at one point that he was going to fight at Noche. Oh, and by the way, it was going to be against Brian Ortega. I was into it. I thought that was very interesting. Now, the reason I suggest for you Brian Ortega is everything surrounding Charles for the longest period of time, including his very last fight, had to do with the title. Whether he was fighting for titles, whether he was defending titles, or in his very last fight, the winner draws in to Islam for a title fight. And when I tell you Ortega, I just think you've got some really interesting parity and some really interesting potential news on Charles, particularly once you understand a different world is now opening up for him, right? Number 2 through 10 is now open for Charles, where that was not the case. 1, 2, and 3. Which order do you want to do it? Those were all that were available for Charles. Okay, great. Hold that thought. Dana said Holloway. Did he say that on accident? Sometimes you'll get on a roll. I've been there where I'm seeing somebody else in my head and a different name comes out or vice versa, right? He's in the war room. Max's name is up there in a couple of spots. I would assume opposite Topuria for the world title. Weren't we told that? And the only reason I'm not positive, guys, is we've known it was Max versus Topuria since the post-fight press conference at UFC 300, which was back in April, but it was never announced. We thought it was going to be on Noche, and then we found out for sure it's going to be Salt Lake City. That even got reported by the media, but the UFC stepped in front of it and said, hey, they're speculating. We haven't said that yet. Then when the UFC did say, I thought it was for Abu Dhabi. But now Dana has said he's got news coming out on Holloway. And if he misspoke, which I would assume is most likely, but what if he didn't? What if he didn't misspeak? Oh, by the way, when he said I got news coming out on Connor, he quickly said, Chandler, we think that we know that. What if he just did it again? Because the 1 for 302 that should have been made, when Connor came off the card and could not fight Chandler, the fight to make was a BMF title of Max versus Charles. That was the fight to make. And I know that those discussions, I wasn't the only one. I came out and I was pushing it, but that caught wind. People liked that idea. There was something to it, ever so small, in all fairness. And I believe that Max is fighting Ilya. In fact, I don't believe there is Holloway news coming out. I think that Dana saw something and a name came out. That's what I think. But I'm not positive. It's not what he said. He said, I got news on Holloway. Would it be possible to have news on Holloway that doesn't involve Ilya? Would it be possible? If that fight were interrupted, before you could have any news on Holloway, you would have to interrupt that fight. Is it possible that that fight could be interrupted and we don't know? I mean, that seems like a thing where you break into an Instagram Live and you say it instantly to be the one that told it because we're all going to find out, right? Telephone, telegraph, or telefighter. None of them can keep a secret. The word's going to get out. Is that possible? Or do we come back to he misspoke? Okay. But it does make for something very peculiar. And the whole way around, we haven't heard Connor's name mentioned by the UFC in fight news. Hey, I got an announcement coming out with Connor, where his name then got watered down with three other guys. We got on Holloway, Chandler, and Oliveira. That hasn't happened before. He commands his own
type of press. So it was an interesting statement. And what could that news be? And is there something on Holloway? Because if it's not Taporia, I would assume it has to do with the BMF belt. I guess we're all going to have to wait and find out. Holloway versus Ilya Topuria are grappling. They're grappling. It's going to be under Abu Dhabi rule set. So you're going to have 20 minutes. There are going to be judges. The judges aren't supposed to be involved. You two boys are supposed to go out and settle it yourself. But should we get to 20 minutes, we'll have a way to figure this thing out. Who do you think wins that? Topuria versus Holloway. Who wins that? And of all the scenarios I could give you, that might be your hardest. Because while you recognize that both of them, at least in theory, are very good grapplers, you haven't seen a lot of it. Like, that's not something that you actually know. You don't close your eyes and have a frame of reference for how Topuria does off his back on the ground. Or how Topuria does on top with somebody in their guard on the ground. The same would go for Max. So, okay, now let's just make it a boxing match. These guys are just going to box. 5 5-minute rounds. MMA rules standards. Going to be judged 10-9. Use MMA time set. And it's just boxing. Who do you have? You want to know what? You want to know what I think? I know this is going to be very closely divided, but if I had a way, more of you than not lean towards Topuria, but you don't know why. Okay, great. Now these guys are going to box, but they can both throw four kicks. At anywhere they want, they can throw four kicks. Now, what I just did is describe for you exactly what's going to happen. These two are going to go have a boxing match. And they can, if they want, throw up to four kicks, but those aren't going to be very affecting the outcome of the match. They're not going to knock somebody out. They're not going to change the judge's decision. They're going to really focus on their hand. They're really going to focus on circling. So now you come down to all the basic questions with boxing. Who's faster? Who's more powerful? Who's got the head movement? Who's got the endurance? I think you have a really hard time answering that. Like, if I asked you who was going to win between Max and Topuria, you'd have given me an answer, and you're feeling good about it, right? Like, this is starting to be a polarizing fight. Max is one of the most popular and possibly number one, possibly the most popular fighter right now in the locker room. But Topuria's skills are very respected. And the four things that do matter in boxing, if I was to ask you between Topuria and Max, who's got better footwork? You're going to have a hard time. Who's got better speed? You're going to have a hard time. If I ask you about power, there does appear to be something special with Topuria. After all, he just knocked out a king of a division. But Max left the division. He fought a champion at a higher weight class. I mean, the only thing we know, historically speaking, and that includes if we were to bring statistics from boxing over, is that the lighter guy does not knock the bigger guy out. But Max did. Who's got the conditioning? That is always a huge intangible. I mean, it's never discussed when we look at Max versus Justin Gaethje. That was just such a great fight. And talking about conditioning is a double-edged sword where you're inadvertently insulting someone else and nobody wants to insult Gaethje. If you start saying somebody got tired and somebody quit are the exact same thing. If a fighter ever has confidence, he tells you before the fight, I'm confident, I can win this fight. He actually feels it. He feels it hard. He feels confidence. All he is telling to you is, I think I'm in better shape than that guy. There is nowhere else where you would get confidence. You will ask yourself one question, which is, in a worst case scenario, we get to the end of the fight. Can I follow the golden rule and protect myself at all times or not? And anytime a guy talks about short notice, not the opponent we wanted. Well, we're doing the company a favor. Anytime they're talking about that, they're talking about I didn't have enough time for whatever reason to get my conditioning to where I needed to be confident that I can win. But if you were to be fair with yourselves, and it wasn't because Justin Gaethje started wilting, that's the reason we don't like to talk about it, because we do not inadvertently attempt to give an insult to Gaethje. We love Gaethje and we love that fight, but the truth is, the great denominator, which turned out to be the divisible, was the conditioning of Max. That punch never lands. Had Max not been in such great shape, but he was fighting at a class that he never won before. He didn't want to be in that weight class. He had a bad experience the one time he went up, and that was against Dustin Poirier, and that's just a quote coming from Max. He is comfortable back at 45. He is confident down at 45. He has beaten everybody in the world at 45, or he has been right in there with them, except for one guy, and it's only because they haven't met up, and that is going to be Ilia Topuria. And guys, you know where the genesis? You know where the genesis of this theme that I'm even speaking to you from? I read a headline from Max Holloway, who says, at first, a lot of people laughed, but at 308, I will have the last laugh, or they won't be laughing anymore, right? You know one of those, and I just sitting back, and I even turned to my partner, Ryan, we're reading this news together. I said, Ryan, did I miss, who laughed at Max? Ryan says, I don't know. Well, why would Max think he was laughed at? Like, what part of this is supposed to be funny? The ridiculous part is going up at 300 and having a main event that's not put in the main event spot. They could have laughed about that. A ridiculous part is having DraftKings only having Max as a 2-1 underdog against Justin Gaethje. People could have laughed about that. The idea that Max Holloway would steal 300, UFC 300, which at least in theory was to be Dana White's crowning moment, and he stole the entire thing, that would have been something you could have laughed at. Knockout of the night, knockout of the year, fight of the year candidate, that's something you could have laughed at. What is funny about Max going down and proclaiming that he could beat Ilia Topuria? Who told Max that somebody's laughing about that? I don't know if there has been a fight at featherweight in history that has felt more serious. And I would save one. Save one would be Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo. That felt serious. That needed to happen for a number of different reasons. Legacy and championships and time was going to stand still until those two got in there and they figured it out the hard way. That is the one and only exception I can find. I have not seen a 145-pound title fight more necessary than this. And there's nothing funny about it. Ilia Topuria doesn't beat you in nice and funny ways. He bludgeons you until you fall asleep against your will. There's nothing funny about that. Max Holloway will chop you like a tree. He will start low. He will go high. He will finish in the midsection until you are so fatigued you cannot even put your hands up anymore. Forget about hitting him back. Forget about throwing a punch back. Brian Ortega, who trains as hard as anyone can train, said after that fight, I was at a level of fatigue I could not put my hands up. I couldn't put them where they needed to be to help slow down the force of Max's constant pressure of his left and right hands. This is Ortega speaking. There's nothing funny about that. There's something horrific about it. But wherever Max thought he's being laughed at, or where maybe it's that his goal and his dream to recapture the championship that he's being laughed at, Max is a champion right now. Right now as we speak. He is a sitting reigning champion. He is the number one contender for the 45-pound championship, which he wants more than anything else in the sport, of which is a belt he's already had. Nobody's laughing at Max Holloway. Nobody's laughing at the idea or the concept that he belongs in this spot or that he can win in this spot. But time is getting closer. And the only thing between these guys is a little bit of space. Where do you side? Where do you side with what you've seen as a body of work? Not just the knockout. You can't just remember the knockout to Topuria over Volk, because you'd be forgetting 5 minutes of his life before that, which was a round that he lost to Volk. So what do you make of it? Max versus Topuria. What part of this do you find funny? Dana, Chandler, there has never been a fight like this, and not even close. not even close, that hasn't gotten ugly by now. There hasn't been a fight like this where you got three entities, all of which are pulling for the same thing. Somehow don't come together, and I'm talking about promoter, red corner, blue corner. Where a year ago things hadn't gotten ugly, there hasn't been, and there's been Ultimate Fighter, coaches from the Ultimate Fighter, the single greatest marketing vehicle in the history of our industry, which is now getting competition from Dana White Contender Series. All right, there is no other even argument. There has been seasons where those coaches couldn't come together or couldn't come together on the agreed upon time, where things like this happened. It got real ugly real fast, and that usually cleared it up, as a matter of fact. As soon as they saw the importance by the promoter, they changed their tune. I'll give them credit for that. I'm just sharing with you that it happened. Here we've got Chandler, who is so open and so easy to work with that he has truly let you know it can be at any weight class. It can be 3 rounds, 5 rounds, or 4 rounds if you would like to. It can be in North America, South America. It'll go to a different continent. Like, just for example, Chandler has been so easy to work with, to the extent that he'll even go and he'll do a season of The Ultimate Fighter, if that's what it takes to get to this fight. I mean, I know I just told the story in reverse, but that has been Chandler, and that has been extremely consistent. Now, contrary to the way some of you are remembering it, Conor McGregor is very sincere in wanting to fight. Conor is very sincere in his understanding that he is not going to get a different opponent. It's one of the few things that Conor has actually respected. I don't know how that was presented to Conor. I can just tell you, however that was presented behind the scenes of your next opponent is Michael Chandler, or you don't have another opponent. However that was presented to him, it was presented in a language that he speaks. Because it is one of the things in Conor's entire tenure here that he has understood very clearly. He used to play with Chandler. He used to mess with Chandler's emotions. He used to enjoy doing it on Twitter on a regular basis. However that got explained to him of do what you want and have your fun, just understand it's going to be Chandler. Whatever that was, great job. Whoever made that presentation should go back and try to remember what it is they thought and felt and what music they heard and what they had for breakfast that day. Like, they need to re-go back to that moment. And then you've got promoter who, again, a lot like Michael Chandler, has openly said anything. This guy has done so much and been so easy to work with, speaking about Conor McGregor, and even gave you a history lesson. Specifically to the night that Conor was supposed to fight Jose Aldo for a world championship, and it ends up being polar opposite stylistic with Chad Mendez for an interim championship, and Conor never flinched. But Dana actually took the time to go back and talk about these things and to tell these stories and to talk about how easy it was to amend agreements once the agreements were made. Conor's done a number of things that people didn't ever think he would do. They never thought he would do a season of The Ultimate Fighter. It turns out he's done two. I might have lost track, and there's even a third one in there. I'm just sharing for you. Dana laid this out. Said because of that, yeah, he could come in at 170 right now, fight Kamaru Usman for the belt. I get that was a couple of champions ago, but that was at the time the statement was made. He could come back at 155 and take on Islam for the belt. He could do something in between. And Dana had no reason to say that because he wasn't having to sell something to the public. He was not making a title fight between Conor and Kamaru Usman that he's now going to have to sell to the public. He didn't make the fight. He just still made the point, and he still took the lumps over it because he was that sincere in Conor's previous dealings and his sincerity to fight. Now, I'm just sharing you all three sides. If you have the evidence that I just gave you, you just gave Chandler a full pass. You just gave Dana a pat on the back. You just gave Conor an attaboy. Well, one of them's at fault here. One of them has to be at fault. Who is it? Nobody's even accusing somebody else. I have never seen this where all the sides get along quite as well. I think Connor is sincere that he would like to fight 170 pounds, T-Mobile Arena, December 2024, opposite Michael Chandler, under the unified rules of the mixed martial arts. I believe him. I don't think that's a ploy for attention. I believe an inside scoop that I'm getting that the UFC wants all of those same things. They just want it in January in California. I mean, it sounds like you got to know who you're going to believe, right? I understand. That's the question to everything. I'm sharing for what I believe, and for very good reason. But that sure sounds close. I mean, that sounds like we're real close here. So we've never quite been in a situation like this, and I do have to wonder, what is this fight about? I was blown away with the evidence that Conor McGregor, top draw red panty night, is still in full effect to the extent that it is. Conor does not have a grudge with Michael Chandler. Conor can build interest, but he does not have a grudge. There was no sliding in me DMs. There was nothing personal there. This isn't a rematch, for example. This isn't a contenders match. It's not even a title match. It's just an interesting match because these two personalities have made it interesting. Fair enough, but can we agree? That's not much. That's not much in comparison to the very personal, at times nationalistic, at times ethnic, championship, right? This is what we're comparing to. We're comparing the Chandler fight to other things Conor has done because Conor and Chandler had a box office that eclipsed anything Conor has ever done. And Conor holds spots 1 through 10. He not only came in to beat one of his own records, he came in and beat his own best record. 17.4 million, New York against Eddie Alvarez, champion versus champion, first time the Octagon had been to Madison Square Garden. I mean, there was a lot of things there that you could not duplicate, which helped to explain for the record gate. I think it was 17.2 million. You get my point. All of those things are absent. And Conor had 25 plus million at the box office that wasn't sold out. It would have come in about $27.5 million. $10 million over his own number one record that he was coming in to beat. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. Like, it feels like everybody's getting along. It feels like there's still a real need for this. It feels like nothing's gotten ugly yet. It feels as though Conor really wants to fight. He wants to do it in December. Chandler, for sure, is on board. I mean, we can just leave it at that. And it seems like the UFC really wants him as well. It doesn't seem like they're upset with him. It doesn't seem like the rehab or the discolored pinky toe, whatever that was. But I do feel that we are missing why this fight matters. I feel we saw this when Mike Tyson came back against Roy Jones Jr., and even though it was an exhibition, and even though it was guys in different weight classes, it was a question of, can Mike do this after this layoff? Is he physically able to do this? I get that Mike Tyson is a once-in-a-lifetime attraction, but Conor McGregor is a once-in-a-lifetime attraction. And the real question is, can he do this? Can he do this off an injury? Can the most undisciplined guy in the sport beat the most disciplined guy in the sport? And by the way, do you guys remember how DraftKings had this? Because they had Conor McGregor as a favorite. Now, that can always be misleading at DraftKings or any other line when it has to do with Conor McGregor because of the loyalty and support. It's not necessarily, like other competitions, the fans expressing who they think is going to win. With Conor, sometimes it's who are they behind. But nonetheless, the most undisciplined guy against the most disciplined guy. And what is accurate on Conor? What information is accurate on Conor?
Connor came out, I believe, to play with the media, and the media was so scared of Connor, they didn't play back. There is no part of me that believes Connor thought he was going to get away with taking a picture of a discolored pinky toe, not including his own face in the photo, doing no proof whatsoever that that was even his toe. I think he was having fun. He was waiting as a master. He was waiting for you to come back and call him on what I just said. How do we even know that that's your toe? What about that toe would stop you from limping your way down to a press conference that was held in Ireland? Like, I think Connor was waiting for all of this. And the media got so scared that they didn't do any of it. They didn't push back. They didn't challenge it. I think they missed a really great opportunity for media and marketing and entertainment. But either way, here we are in this spot. Three entities, very strong, very powerful, that all appear to want the same thing. And for the first time ever, it stayed very cordial. Why? If everything is so great, and if we're agreeing at all times and we got nothing to fight about in the fight business, why don't we have a contract? There are no other two guys that the organization would like to fight, where they've made a decision they'd like to fight and the guys have agreed to fight each other and we don't have a contract. So why don't we have one for this? I'm not answering a question right now, by the way, guys. I'm asking the question. You answer it. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Kamaru Usman is washed up. I did not know this was going on. Kamaru Usman did an interview. He's out in Texas at a college showing and representing the sport that he came from. I caught this interview where he was having to answer questions about the narrative that he is washed up. I have never heard that. Have you guys said it? Do you guys believe it? I did not know anybody had said this ever. I have never heard that privately about Usman. I've never heard that in private conversations with people that don't like Usman. I have never heard he's washed up, but he has. He was having to answer for it. And you know what? If that is a narrative, let's go all in. Because there's a trajectory to a career, right? And it goes the same way. The toes you stepped on your way up are the asses that you're going to kiss on your way back down. Like, it goes the same way. You try to break into the business. You try to get your name out there. You try to fight guys that got a little bit more recognition than what you deserve. And your first time on the main card won't be because of you. It will be because of them. You finally found a way to lure one of them out. You're on the main card. You might make your way to a co-main event. Very rarely, less than 1/10 of guys will get above a co-main event, but that could be a main event. Oh my goodness, that could be a title shot of a pay-per-view, right? But okay, then you stay there as long as you can, and you come back to the co-main event. And you're working your way down to just enough to be on the main card. Then you fall off the main card, getting less press conferences, you're talking about the heyday, and you're one bad performance or loss away from the unemployment line where you started in the first place. Like, that's the life of the career. So because of that, a guy like Kamaru Usman that's washed up has been, right? This is what, I can't believe this is actually being said about him. I truly have not heard that anywhere, but he did. Okay, great. If he's washed up and his best days are behind him, he was still a world champion main event and he still gets to work his way down the card. He's still going to get a contract, and then he's going to get one after that, at a minimum. Does anybody disagree? I'm pausing so you can think about that and give me your retort. Because if he's washed up and he's a has-been, you don't need him in those co-main spots. You don't need him jerking the curtain. You don't need him anywhere on the card. Can we agree? But you also can't shake him. You can't get rid of him. This is the same respect that everybody gets shown on their way down. Okay, let's make a deal. Let's speed it up. All in or all done. Usman fights one more time. It's for the title. If he doesn't win it, we don't play the work your way down the card game. We don't play the co-main event, short notice, change weight classes. We don't play any of this. Thank you, F you, goodbye. Do we have a deal? Do we have a deal? This is what I was wanting to come out of Kamara's mouth as he was giving this interview. This is what I wanted him to say so badly because he is on the cusp. And if anyone knows it, it's him. He's had more damn title fights than anybody because he was bringing the belt most of the time. Even in his college days, he wrestled for the championship. Even in his Ultimate Fighter days, he fought for the championship. The guy didn't know anything other than isn't championship matches. So, he is right there about to get Leon. I apologize, Blahal. He is right there. There is only one guy, even in discussion, that might nudge him out. And that is Rachmanov. And it's wildly important that they get this figured out. If Rachmanov nudges him out, there's probably not going to be another time that Kamaru's going to be needed. This is the time he's got to beat him. Rachmanov has got to shine himself up just a little bit more. The UFC, no matter how big it is and no matter what the fan base is not ready for a press conference with Muhammad and Rachmanov. And Kamaru Usman has got to push that narrative. And I'm only sharing that because he's this close. And at one point, he didn't know it. Talking about Kamaru, he didn't know it. In fact, Kamaru called out Rachmanov, saying, Rachmanov is next. If I beat Rachmanov, I then get to become next. Kamaru had not paid attention that Dean Thomas had already gone on ESPN, Lorisenko, Brett Okamoto, and yours truly co-signed the statement that he should be next. He should be now. So Kamaru finds that out a day late, but then he gets on board with it. And I'm just sharing for you. That's where we're at. That announcement is going to come. Bilal Muhammad will be defending his title for the first time versus, and it is either going to say Shavkat Rakhmonov or it is going to say Kamaru Usman. There is no other name. When the Bilal announcement comes out, it will be against one of those two. And you can't argue against Rakhmonov. I believe he's won 18 fights. He's finished them all. He's got an undefeated UFC career. Like, he's incredible. But he also was coming off of an injury. He hasn't done a great job of getting in the media. His name's going to come out of that lottery ticket. Because it did, not because of something that he did in terms of promotion. None of which I'm stating are bad things. I'm just stating what it is. And I do believe that Kamaru Usman could up the attention, right? They're in a battle right now, Rakhmonov versus Usman. They're in a battle for the paper. One of them gets sent the bout agreement. They're in that battle right now. And I think Kamaru's doing just fine. I'm not sure he's not going to win this thing, but I will also admit it's a little bit of a toss of a coin. It's not going to just come down to Kamaru, what have you done for me lately? Shavkat, what have you done for me lately? A little bit's going to be, hey, we got to shine this guy up. And I think if Kamaru comes out and puts a cherry on the sundae and says, I'm all in. I think if he comes out and says, I will make a deal with you right now. You say I'm washed up. I say I'm the best. One of us is right. And we're going to let Bilal Muhammad decide. I believe if he sweetens the pot to that, if he raises the stakes to that, I believe for sure he will be next to face Bilal Muhammad. Francis Ngannou versus John Jones. UFC, scared to do it, resisting doing it. Holding up the ability for it to be done. And that is a narrative that's come out a few times. It's never caught wind. That's never been a viral piece. But it does come up a few times. And we can discuss it for Francis versus John. But the actual matchup isn't the point. The discussion would be. So why would the UFC put on John versus Francis? Or why would the UFC allow John to go fight Francis? Why would the UFC support the idea of John versus Francis? Now, please go. I'm open to any answer that you've got. But I didn't ask you if you'd like to see the fight or if you're interested in the fight. Or I didn't do any of those things. I'm asking you why the UFC would pursue that fight. Now, it's very fun to act as though they're the ones that are holding it up for strategic reasons. But historically, you would be wrong because they tried to make the fight for an exorbitant amount of money. John Jones, who had never even fought in the weight class, entered the weight class knowing Francis was a top guy that he was going to have to face, and knowing full well his first fight would be a title fight. Now, in all fairness, you had Stipe, you had DC, you had Francis. Like, John didn't know who it would be, but do any of us think that that mattered? Like, it was made very clear he was going to go to heavyweight. He gave his light heavyweight belt back. I'm just reminding you of the timeline. It was made very clear by Dana at a press conference. Don't even start to have these conversations with me. When John comes back, it will be for a title. Any weight class he comes back at, John's fighting for a title. So we all understand that. So then Francis has the belt over Stipe. Like, I know it's fun to say that John was scared and John wouldn't do that fight. I get it. I mean, that's right. It's playground and it's poking. But just to remind you, in case you are being sincere, I'm trying to help you and educate you here. John went into the weight class pursuing Francis. That happened. And the UFC had the ability to make that fight and tried to make that fight. Not one time. several times over the course of just less than a year. That's just the truth. So Francis leaves and goes 1-1. 1-1 in boxing and no MMA. And the discussion comes of making John versus Francis. And I would just come back to you again and say, why would the UFC do that? If you think that they're the ones holding up great sport and great competition, why would they do that? I'm really just asking you the golden rule of life. If you were in their shoes, it was your decision, what's the decision that you would make? And I think you'd have a very hard time answering that question. And if you were to say, so we could all find out who the greatest fighter in the world is, like, that's a fun thing to say. And I don't even know that you'd be wrong, right? Like, you would have had Francis, who was the reigning heavyweight champion, and would have had John, who was the light heavyweight champion. He gave it back, but he never lost the title. Like, you got a really interesting story there. You got two hammers going against each other. I think that that would have been the biggest draw in our industry. But when you come now and you say you want to see John and Francis to know who the best is, do you really believe that? And I'll take you at your word, it's just I know that you've been saying it's Aspinall, and before that you said it was Pavlich, and partway in there you said it was Pereira. Are you confident that Francis is going to win his next fight? It's one of these interesting things. And the reason I go down that road is I would never expect a reasonable answer from a reasonable person to have anything to do with competition. I know that that's the first answer that you would give, so we can find out who the best is. Okay, great, but if you were the UFC, why would you let that happen? Why? What is it that you have to gain? And then moreover, what are the reasons that you wouldn't let it happen? And that one is the one you feel that you can answer because they're scared because their guy, John Jones, is going to get beat. And you kind of got to turn your head and say, okay, is that your final answer? I'm just asking you for one, but is that the one you're going with? The UFC won't let it happen because they're afraid John's going to get beat. Is that your final answer? Okay, great. That's really wonderful. If you were in their shoes and you thought your guy wasn't going to get beat, you wouldn't release him either. Like you haven't helped the situation by saying that. You've actually just answered the entire thing within your own statement. And it just turns into one of these odd situations. Why would somebody suggest that somebody promote somebody that isn't them, that's openly said, I don't want to be with them? Why would you possibly think that that was going to happen? Why would you even suggest that it happen? Particularly when, just over a year ago, it was legally and contractually able to happen. And I go down that road and I bang that drum because it is very interesting to me, even though it's not viral, but it is the one topic the UFC and their unwillingness to co-promote. It's the one topic that no matter how poorly the engagements are online, it does keep resurfacing. Like I've never seen, why does the NFL not play the CFL or the XFL? How does the NCAA champion team not take on the dream team? Like basketball's a really strange one for me. They don't even contest it. They just send Olympians. There should be five other people that can raise their hand and say, we want to play you. And that would hold up. That would hold up in any court. They would back down instantly because they know that they would lose the fight. You don't have five guys that respect the Olympics enough to want to do it or know the process of filing litigation. I mean, I'm just sharing with you. I do think that that's very interesting. There's a whole nother conversation, just so you know. I never talk about this, and I'm not going to go very far with it. But John and Francis could fight today. There is nothing to stop them, just so you know. I know you believe differently, and I know that you've been told differently. But the only reason that that exclusivity works is because people have been told differently, and they believe it. There is nothing that could stop them, just so you understand. And why would they do this? Is that what you would do? Is that your level of business prowess? Would you go in and would you build something? Because if you believe that they're scared, you believe that's going to hurt John Jones, who's fought one time in 4 years. Like, he's not an overly counted on guy for business, even though you like to tell the story that way. And if you do tell the story that way, then do you believe if John wins, he gets a bounce? Like do arenas sell up faster? Does pay-per-view do more? Do more media request interviews? I'm just asking, like, how much do you really mean that? How much do you really think that? It's a very
very interesting thing to say. But the idea of promoting somebody that isn't yours, it's a very baffling concept. Like the idea that Apple would be blamed for not promoting Microsoft's chief legal to COO. Like you sit around and go, I don't know how to respond to that because I'm not stupid. But some of you do believe that fight should be made. So I'd like to hear from you. Because sometimes it's interesting to hear from people that are stupid. Joe Rogan is not hating on Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. Joe Rogan has me wondering if we should all stop hating on it. I mean, if this is going to happen, if they are going to go in there, if we can all admit that the interviews, the buildup, the numbers and excitement around those, where you actually, when you go to the internet and you go looking for Mike Tyson training footage, you're actually hoping that he and Coach Cordero have upped something recently because you do want to see him. You actually stop what you're doing because you know they're at a press conference. Mike comes up to Jake Paul and Jake pushes him ever so soft. And instead of that enraging Mike Tyson, it makes him laugh almost like he had it ahead of time. Then Mike comes in and pushes Jake back, and it's ever so soft that it's silly, but there's still something there. And Mike Tyson doesn't have two ways to win. Mike Tyson wouldn't pretend he has two ways to win. Mike Tyson must put this man down. That's interesting to me. I think that's interesting to you. And I can tell you, in the age demographic that is Joe Rogan and above, they love it. Coach Steve Tecaner, right here in Westland, Oregon. Known him since 1992. He has never invited me over to his house. He lives a mile away from me, and he was my coach. He's never invited me to his house. He has already invited me 3 months in advance to his house to watch that fight. And Steve Tecaner, who won 2 national championships in his own right in the 80s, is now feeling rejuvenated. He's now feeling strong again and powerful and as though the world could belong back to that generation. I mean, this is what Mike Tyson's represented, and it's far more powerful than I fully understood. I knew there was something there. I also knew if they go and they follow through with this Dallas and Jerry Stadium and this whole bit, they're going to look like fools. It would not matter if it was $10 a ticket or 2 tickets for $10. You ever seen those? You bring a can of soup and a kid gets in free. You could do anything you wanted. 80,000 people do not show up to Dallas Stadium to watch that match. But while that was clearly overshot by them, it still does have a place. Jake Paul going out and doing what he did to Mike Perry. I mean, one thing we know about Mike Perry is he doesn't go down. We're not really sure on the power of Jake Paul. It appears to be great, but there are different people that have taken it and their reaction is to not fall down. One thing unique about Jake Paul, he will knock you out in the first round if he connects, but he will knock you out in the 7th round if he connects. Great boxers don't do that. That can't be said for Canelo Alvarez. That can't be said for Floyd Mayweather. That can't be said for Oscar De La Hoya. That can't be said for Iron Mike Tyson. If you want to be real literal, go look at Mike Tyson's records. Go to 7th round. Not even how the fight turns out. Go to look at the 7th round and see if he put anybody down or out. So it's just a unique fight. Now, youth, clearly on the side. Experience, clearly on the side. I don't agree with some people who say, well, Mike has the experience. Why is that? Well, with his amateur career and his pro career, he's done that over 100 times. And Jake Paul has barely done that a dozen times. Like, well, I don't agree with that. Though a court of law probably would, I don't. What have you done for me lately? What have you done more recently? What have you done in this era? What have you done in the last year? Is far more relevant than what have you done as a body of work since your time on this earth. So Mike Tyson has got to put him down. Is there any reason that we should continue hating on this fight? Now, Joe Rogan does make a statement. He says Mike Tyson, even at 57 years old, will still knock your head into the third row. I don't know what evidence Joe has of that. That seems very lofty. The threat and the belief that it's just one punch and the last thing to go is their power. There is no scientific proof that the last thing to go within a fighter's skill set is his power.
There is nothing quantifiable. That is just an expression that is put out. And Joe says that Mike Tyson, at 57 years old, still has the ability to knock your head off. Based on what evidence? And I ask that very sincerely. If there is a training footage or a video out there, and I don't know who's sparring with Mike. I wanted to. I offered myself to the point that I got calls from both camps, but then we didn't get any further. Just to remind you, I wanted to spar. Whatever happens in the practice room stays in the practice room. You never bring it out. So going right in, we're going to break that deal. I'm going to go and I'm going to spar with Jake. I'm then going to go and spar with Mike. I'm going to come talk to you guys, and I'm going to tell you what my experience was. Now, one of the problems is when Mike heard this, he heard Chael wants to come down and fight me. And that's not what I'm offering. You got 3-4 workout partners in there. I become one of them. When it's my turn, I go in. I move with you. I work with you. I do my part to get your lungs going. We're just sparring. I'm going to go do the same thing with Jake. But then I want to come talk to you guys about it. I want to tell you what I felt. I want to tell you about the speed of Jake Paul and his movement. I want to tell you about his defense and how hard he was to find, whereas Mike Tyson, on their hand, is right there in front of you, and he's bobbing and weaving. I could find his body, but getting him to the head was a little tougher to do. And his counterattacks, when I went for the head or I went for his body, like, I want to share these things with you. Coming out and making a claim that at 58 years old, he can still knock your head into the front row. Based on what evidence? I'd like to be that evidence. I would like to offer. I think that's interesting. I'm going to film it. I'm going to own the content. Other than that, I just need a yes from those two guys in a day. That's it. I'll do everything else. I do think that Mike Tyson has a shot. I do think that Mike Tyson, on pride alone, and when people are asking why Mike took this fight, there is always an answer, and it's always an answer from somebody who does not know Mike, who has never spoke to Mike, who never got this answer even secondhand from somebody that did speak to Mike. But the answer is the same thing. He's taking the fight for the money. Well, I know Mike well enough, guys. I could blow your mind on opportunities Mike has to make money. You ever heard of an appearance fee? I will do an appearance fee. I'll show up somewhere. I'll sign autographs. I've done them for politicians before. I've done them for fighters. I've done them for people with fight wear. There'd be pictures. You hang out. It's a good time. I charge $25,000 and I'm not staying for more than an hour. 1 hour in, thank you all. It was very nice. And I leave. Mike Tyson's, can I put this in perspective for you? I have a show. I am of somewhat relevance. I was put in the Hall of Fame 2 weeks ago. I have a show that airs on ESPN. I have the largest within our space YouTube page out there. Can I tell you what Mike Tyson gets for 1 hour, the exact same thing that I just described? He gets flown in a private jet, and he gets $500,000. 1 hour. I'm only sharing that, and that's Mike's business, and that's gross. I told you some. I know it's gross. I'm telling you Mike's numbers. Guys, I don't know anybody else that can get $500,000 for 1 hour, and he's stocked up. By the way, there's certain people, bit stars that you know, that you could bring them in, you could get that money somewhere in the U.S., Mike Tyson's is very different. Mike Tyson in Russia does some of the biggest numbers. Mike Tyson in Saudi Arabia, where I was with him 3 months earlier, gets these crazy numbers. Mike Tyson in Germany. I'm just sharing, like, sometimes you get these guys that are so hot, he could go on one tour where his private jet touches down 3 different times. He's got $1.5 million, and he's only slept one time, not in his own bed, and nobody tried to punch him. I'm offering you that because it's not about the money. I'm offering you that because Mike Tyson is not going to put his reputation and ego on the line unless he sincerely believes that he can win. Mike Tyson will find a way out of this fight. He's already done it once. He will find a way out of this fight a second time. And make no mistake, he demanded and received a signing bonus. He will keep that bonus. This isn't about the money. That is my only point to you. Joe Rogan says he can still knock somebody's head off. I don't think that Joe has any evidence of that. I think that that's something that Joe just wants to be true because Joe's around that same age range. But Mike Tyson believes he can and is going to beat Paul. He's not getting in there for any other reason. He's getting there because he wants the fight. It's not personal. He's getting there because he wants to show the world. He wants to show that he still got it. He wants to show that power and timing and conditioning, that ability to dig deep, that grit, the hard work
and dedication needed prior to that fight is still something that somewhere within him he possesses. And he's willing to risk it in front of the world. And the way he will be talked about and those $500,000 show-up appearances are gone after this fight if it doesn't go his way. I have never seen a boxing match where the A side has risked more ever than what Mike Tyson, the A side, is risking to take on Jake Paul. Can Mike knock his head off or anyone else's? That's a bit lofty. Does he have enough to put him down and beat him? We're going to find out soon, and I encourage you, much like Joe Rogan, get on board with it. Enjoy it. Quit hating on it. Embrace it. We don't actually know what to expect. And for a first time in boxing, first time in a long time, it's a fun spot to be in as a fan. Kamala Harris is running as the outsider. Elect me day one, make these changes, just have a little faith, give me a shot, put me in coach. And it's working. It's very interesting, right? It's interesting. But it does remind me of Nicky Rod's call out of Gordon Ryan. Nicky Rod calls him out. Massive platform, big audience. People watching around the world. Huge moment. Offers Gordon what would be, should that came about, the highest paid grappling match in history by a lot. There would be a total of $2 million at stake. And that is very compelling. That puts Gordon in a massive position of, if you don't accept, then you're afraid of this guy. This guy is the champion. This guy has offered you. He is calling you out. He's willing to risk everything that he just did. He's willing to put up more money than anyone ever has. You either accept, or it's very clear to anybody watching, you don't believe that you can beat him. Which completely ignores the fact of all the times that they've already competed. Like, that's just interesting to me. It started to lure me in. It started to lure me. Hey, we got to get those guys together. I had to remind myself, wait a minute, I've seen those guys a number of times. I love the idea of a rematch. I love what Nicky is doing. I love that he's pursuing him, by the way. But that's subsequent to the idea that is planted in so many people's minds that that match has not happened. And if Gordon does not do that match, that is somehow a declaration, a sidestep at a minimum. A defeat by forfeit, a moral defeat by forfeit. And that is working. But it's not any different than the previous example that I gave you. Like, it's not that people don't know one candidate's currently in power. It just gets presented a little bit different. And what an incredible short-term memory that we have. So Gordon has responded to Nicky. Now, I gotta jump around a little bit, but Nicky is very interesting to the sport of grappling. He's a very handsome guy. He's young. He's damn near unbeatable. In all fairness, you don't know three guys that can beat him, right? And he's got a rival who lives 10 miles away. I mean, on the entire earth, we have found that Gordon and Nicky are amongst the best, and they only live 10 miles away. Like, can we agree that that's interesting? Can we agree they used to train together? They used to have the same coach. They've competed. They're mortal rivals. Like, can we agree on that? Then, simultaneously, you have the internet's biggest surprise character, Craig Jones. Craig Jones is so damn interesting and charismatic and funny, and he has a presence. He has a skill set and a knowledge, but then he's a bit of a double threat where he can then relay that skill set and knowledge. Most great coaches in grappling were not great grapplers. Most great grapplers do not make great coaches. Craig is doing them both simultaneously. It's interesting. Can we agree? And then you've got Craig and Nicky that have teamed up to go after Gordon. Now, when Gordon put out his response, which was very thought out, I know this response by Gordon. I know those because I've had those one. Hey, I'm better to let it go. I can't. I know there's an opportunity to be the bigger man. It turns out I'm not. As a matter of fact, I can't even go to sleep tonight until I get this out. It's eating at me. I could tell this was the response by Gordon. But nowhere within Gordon's response did he remind everybody that he's done those matches multiple times. I just find it to be an interesting concept. Even when I do compare it to politics, and there's no political statement here, I'm not a sports fan. I'm a political fan. I like the verbal debate. I like the debate of body language. That is who I learn from. When I got into fighting, I never learned to try to emulate and copy some athlete that I saw. I read things about me that I try to copy professional wrestlers, but they're wrong. I learned to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news. Those reports were wrong. And I see one side saying, you can't win if you don't do interviews. Says who? Where did you possibly get that? We've seen somebody win that didn't even campaign. Like, where are you getting these ideas? I remember, and I'll never forget it, when Mama Bush was trying to defend her son Jeb, and she said, you, talking about Donald Trump, you cannot insult your way to the White House. And I remember sitting back and just going, do you really know this little about what's going on around you? Like, that was the ultimate sandhagging of political speak. And I bring that to you because it's a very similar thing with Gordon. I think maybe he believes other people know those matches have happened. And those matches have happened multiple times. I must tell you, I follow this close. You guys know that I follow this close. I know of three times that Rodriguez and Gordon have gone at it. And there might be four. And when I tell you I know of three, there might only be two. Right? It's one of these things where even though I'm in the know, I can't totally remember. Like, I see MMA guys do this all the time. Say, I want to fight somebody that's ranked. Nobody knows who's ranked. There's no way to get credit for fighting a ranked guy. We don't know who's ranked or care. My last four guys have all been in the top 10 and I can't get into the top 5. They have? I didn't know that. Not only do I not know that they were ranked, I don't know. I can't remember that you fought four guys. In addition to that, I don't even know where to get that information from. And I'm just sharing for you. I don't know my own record. I know that I never lost, but I don't know how many men that I fought. I'm not attempting to be funny within that. I don't know. I'm normal, but it's very easy to get lost in the weeds when it's your life and to assume that everybody else around you is going to know. And I think that might diminish and or change your opinion of whether Gordon should do this for one or what the outcome would be for two or what the stakes are for three. I think that it would change your mind if you knew that he's done that three times under two different skill sets. I can only remember the Abu Dhabi finals that was over in an instant. And I can remember the Fight Pass Invitational. But for some reason, I thought they then also met up in the absolute. I have that wrong, don't I? Did Nikki get upset? Can't remember that. Can't remember. And I know that Craig has taken on Gordon a number of times. I even remember the last one when Craig lost. It was like by 1 second in EBI overtime, and it was an armbar situation. We thought that Craig was going to beat him. Like, it was one of these really interesting things. I watched it. It's the most I can tell you. I can't tell you what weight class it was. I can't tell you where it was held. I can't tell you who the referee was, just by example. And my point in telling you that is I'm really good at these things. I don't forget things. I'm really good at it. And I saw it, and I'm aware that it happened, but I don't know quite what I saw, and I can't remember quite what had happened. So maybe, right? And my point for saying that is maybe Nikki's got the perfect strategy. Maybe Nikki Rudd is aware. Kamala Harris is aware. She knows people aren't paying attention. Maybe Nikki is betting on the same thing. He goes to the biggest audience that he ever has, and he makes a statement, which is heard by more people than it was ever heard. It was an interesting move, and it's not unprecedented. The company known as the WWF, one time known as the WWWF, which you now know as the WWE, and it was a regional show, and they were very big. They're big out in New York, real big on the East Coast, but they travel up and down the interstate. Traveling circus, it was the same exact concept. As a matter of fact, professional wrestling used to take place at circuses. So they get a TV deal. And when they landed a national television deal, which had never been done, they've got all their backstories. They've got their champions. They've got their competition. They've got all of their storylines in place. And Vince comes and tells them, none of it happened. None. You guys aren't enemies. You guys aren't friends. You haven't beaten him. He hasn't slammed you. If it didn't happen on TV, it didn't happen. And he came out with storylines. Andre the Giant, just by example, had never been body slammed. Andre was getting slammed on a daily basis, but it hadn't happened on TV, and so it never happened. I'm only offering the Andre story to let you know this has been done, and it's very effective, and it's been done for very good reason. And Nikki has come out, and he has challenged Gordon. And Gordon has responded, and Gordon did put up a great argument in the gate case, and he laid out how we're going to do this and all the reasons that he doesn't believe that you're going to be able to get a surety bond and be able to do it in the first place, but I will, in fact, call you, and we'll do it by the terms that you laid out. Like, Gordon did everything that you could possibly do to show courage and to show a belief in himself and to be a competitor. But he didn't remind people that he's already done all of those things. Like, if you think I want to do it for $1 million, it's very helpful to let people know I did it for $2,500. Of course I would do it for $1 million. That would be very helpful. And I'm just bringing it to you because I want to know what you think. In the entire shuffle that is Gordon Ryan's career, there is one character that has been left out, which is Vinny, who was the last American to beat Gordon. But somehow, that's settled business. Somehow that was yesterday. That's fine. That's between the grappling community. I'm just offering for you. And the next one that he's got to do is Mason Fowler. But Mason is not going to come out and demand that people know that. Mason versus Nicky Rod. Again, that's your missing link right there. Mason Fowler. But if he can't come out, he can't shake it, he can't make the noise, as much as the parody, as great as those things would be, Nicky Rod is telling a different story, and he's telling it very, very well. And when I went to bed last night in the court of public opinion between Nicky Rod and Gordon, Nicky was winning. Now, that was before Gordon gave his response, so I will check it tonight, and I will get back to you tomorrow and let you know the score. Get cut from the Buffalo Bills. Now, you must understand, let me preface it with this. I am a Gable Steveson fan. I make this piece like I make many others to serve Gable Steveson, one wrestler to another. But I am genuinely curious what it is you could do to get cut from the Buffalo Bills. Listen, in all fairness, I work for the worldwide leader. There is nobody within sport that doesn't come to the campus in Bristol, Connecticut, where I work. I know a lot of these guys. I know a lot about this. I don't know anybody on the Buffalo Bills. I don't know anyone that knows anybody on the Buffalo Bills. I don't have anyone right here from West Lynn, which produces, believe it or not, a lot of really good football players, to the University of Oregon. That's exactly 2 hours to my south, and we got more money funding a better facility than anybody. I don't know anybody that knows anybody that plays for the Buffalo Bills. I don't know anybody that knows anybody that ever had somebody that played for the Buffalo Bills. Like, I wouldn't think that it's an overly hard thing to do. I'm not trying to be a dick about it. You got to go to Buffalo. That part can't be fun. But in the world of football here, let me give you guys an example. I came from wrestling, okay? Now, try to follow me on this, but wrestling has 9.9 scholarships to spread out over a team. So you can do partial scholarships. A guy could be recruited in wrestling on books, which means if he signs a letter of intent and he comes and joins the team, you will pay for his books. It's about $300 a term. It's not a great deal, but I'm sharing for you. You could do that all the way up to room and board, which is a big deal, particularly your freshman year. They put you in campus. They give you meals. It's a big deal. All of that is paid for. You could get a full ride where you will get no bill whatsoever. As a matter of fact, you will get a check every month. I can tell you when I was there, it started at $700. It started at $740 a month, ended up at $1,100 a month, where they're actually paying you. And then you go get your own food, or at least in theory. And that was wrestling. But football was not that way. Football had 80 scholarships, but it was all or none.
you were either on a full-ride scholarship or you were a walk-on. There was no partial. Nobody got recruited just on room and board. Nobody got recruited just on tuition. Does this make sense to you guys? Because most of you probably thought that's how all scholarships worked. But there are programs like wrestling where you have 9.9 full scholarships and you get to break them up any way that you need to break them up. It's where you'll never meet a wrestler that's on a full ride. You'll meet wrestlers that tell you they're on a full ride. They are lying. But football is very different. Now, I don't quite understand how that worked. I just didn't get it. So I get boned up on this by Joe Donenberg, one of the great athletes to ever come through Westland, one of the great athletes I've ever met. And Joe tells me that even if you're a walk-on at the University of Oregon, if you make it through that and you're a walk-on, that if you ever get in for a play, ever, you go to full ride and you never come off it. If you were a bench guy, no matter where it was and no matter what happens, for whatever reason, if the coach sends you in, offense, defense, or special teams, and you play one down in a live game, you kick up to a full ride and you never come off it. And whether I understood that perfectly clear or not, Joe had told me this 23 years ago, so whether I understood that perfectly clear or not, it's at least the concept, right? It's at least the concept that there are things that if you do, you are a made man for the rest of your career. So I'm taking that from the NCAA, and now I'm asking about the pros. And I know that the pros is more cutthroat. I understand that. I understand that they've got caps, and I understand where they want to go with that money. But I'm looking at somebody like Gable Steveson, an NCAA champion, an Olympic champion, the only NCAA wrestling champion in all of professional football. And listen, hey, maybe that doesn't mean anything. I'm open to it not meaning anything. He's the only Olympic champion, not only in the entire NFL, but in my lifetime in the entire NFL. And there again, maybe that doesn't mean anything. But you have a guy, it's a young guy that people like. He's a leader. He's a natural leader. Oh, by the way, you don't follow Gable, then all of a sudden there's a row of strippers and there's a bunch of empty beer cans and there's not problems that follow him. The guy's like a really fine young man. His father still comes to the events. His mother is proud of him, right? I mean, he's a very good situation. People like him. People want to be around him. In the world of wrestling, he was being recruited and offered marquee deals by rival colleges. I mean, that's the kind of guy. Believe me when I tell you, Tom Brands is not calling you if you're bringing any kind of problems. Like, these are compliments to Gable's character. So he goes out with the Buffalo Bills. Now, I admit, it was the world's worst job of marketing, but I can't put that on the Bills. The Bills are doing their thing, and they're selling out arenas, and they got people, believe it or not, walking around in their merchandise. The Bills are doing just fine. The world of wrestling gave him no love. In fact, the most love that he got was a comment by Christian Pyle wishing him luck. And I even responded to Pyle's comment of saying, hey, is that like a sincere good luck? Or is that like down the road if you really make it? I hope you pop on and give it. I mean, I was just wondering, like, did the world of wrestling really get behind Gable? I'm going to guess they did not. I'm going to guess not only did they deny, they didn't think that it was cool that he was over there. They wanted him back in wrestling. That's fine. Wrestling can't find its way. It can't find its way up. I understand. But I also know they're not very deep into the football season. I also know not a lot would be expected of Gable. It just wouldn't. They know that he doesn't play football. They know he's not a football player. They know he's a young, explosive, awesome, tougher than hell, rare, once-in-a-lifetime athlete. That's what they signed. We're a month into the season. What part of that changed? What part of that is no longer true? Gable played at some point in a game and got a touchdown. I know that because I saw it going around social media. And I know we're not playing a whole lot of ball. So if I'm to go by Joe Donenberg's standard that he taught me about the NCAA, albeit 23 years ago, if you get in for one down, you are a made man for the duration of your college career. Gable got in for that down. He got in.
even Stephen Neal when he played, which was a bigger and more fearsome athlete that did have a real love of football. I remember Stephen Neal's first Super Bowl. He wasn't even in shoulder pads. I mean, he was part of the team. He was making money. He was on the bench, and they didn't even put him in uniform. Like, there was no scenario that he was going to go in. I don't know a lot about football, but I do know that Gables was different after 5 or 6 weeks in that game. He not only was already suited up and booted up, they put him in, and he succeeded. So what is it that gets you ran out? What is it that gets you pushed off? How does Gable play his cards so poorly, not for nothing? I mean, there's ways to not be fired. There's ways to come out and go, oh my God, I think I had a concussion. There's ways to come out and say, oh boy, I think my shoulder's... I mean, it's one of those things, like when you're damaged goods more than anything, a pro sport or even an NCAA sport doesn't need you. They don't have... They're not buying damaged goods, right? I mean, it's kind of like your body and your performance and your ability to do it is very straightforward through the entire recruiting process. But I'll just share for you, it does not work that way. If you're ever in danger of losing a scholarship and all of a sudden, oh my God, all of a sudden, wow, you got... But believe me, you're not going anywhere. You could be in a cutthroat business like the WWE that is absolutely not going to make it, come up with it with an MCL injury, and they will keep you on the shelf all through that rehab, 10, 11, 12 months, and you'll get a check every month, knowing they were going to fire you anyway. They won't do it in those circumstances. I mean, I'm just asking, like, why is Gable not playing this game? Who is it that's managing Gable and hasn't taught him this game? What is it that Gable could have done as a young, explosive, talented athlete that doesn't play football that got him through training camp into pads, into a game, and successfully tackled another guy with the ball that is supposed to be pretty good at football and still got him dumped? Is the contract too much? Is there more behind the scenes? Did something happen in the locker room? There aren't even rumors that follow this guy. I mean, if you want to talk about scandal or like Portis, you know, he's a young guy after all. He's a young guy with a whole bunch of success and some money in his pocket. There's not even rumors that follow him other than he's a good dude that people like and he's got decent leadership skills. Like, I really would like to know. What is it that gets you dumped? Here we are in wrestling, the hardest sport that there's. Everybody will give us that, right? I get that the wrestlers are jealous of the football players because 80,000 people will come cheer for the football. But every will admit who works harder. Every will admit which one's harder to do. And so here we have wrestling that is begging this young man. Begging. I'm making this piece right now in a veiled effort to let him know the only ones giving you any love or any media is us. Quit walking away from us. He's got 7 figures on the table from the hardest sport. The hardest sport is begging him to come. And less hard sports are saying, we don't want you. Less hard sports are saying, good job, but not good enough. It's been good and it's been real, but it's not been real good, right? Here's your hat, what's your hurry? And I'm just wondering why. What is it that I'm missing? What could possibly be going on behind the scenes where you're going to buy a non-football playing athletic wonder who is still a non-football playing athletic wonder? Like, what has changed? Not rhetorical question. I really want to know. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you for listening, which I don't do very often, but I do sincerely mean it. And I'd also like to ask you all to do me a favor this holiday weekend and just leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. My kids are back in school. I'm a little bit down. I could use some positive comments, and I'm not kidding about that. I have an ego as well. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend, everybody. Just make sure you're back on Tuesday for more. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.